Become part of our community to build your social media habits with workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday. 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker Extra Show with Paul Andrews.
Now to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show, Rachel Gotto. Rachel's over there in Galway in Ireland on the West Coast there. Good afternoon, Rachel. It's lovely to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon to you as well. And it's lovely to join you this day.
Right now, some people call me Sherlock, okay, because I'm a bit of a detective. And you're in Galway, but you don't have an Irish accent.
Oh, I love it. The first question goes right in there. Well, very good question to ask, actually, because you're right. I've got what I call a kind of a mid-Irish Sea accent. And the reason being, actually, Paul, is because in the late 60s, my rather eccentric father sold the house in Leeds,
right,
bought an old wooden boat and put the whole family on and sailed to Ireland. And the deal was we were going to sail to New Zealand. Thankfully, we never got there because I don't think that boat would have actually made it even across back over to France or anything. So we were sort of basically dumped in Cork, West Cork in Ireland. And that's where I was born, on the boat in a harbour called Glandore.
Were you really? And do you know, my maternal family are all from Cork.
Ah, okay. So maybe we have connections there.
Yeah, maybe. But I wasn't born on a boat, though.
I know. I've got one up on you there, haven't I?
You certainly have. Oh, what a lovely story. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. Let's kick off by telling the listeners a bit about Rachel and what you do.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I think where I should start, really, is by saying that by the year 2012, I had pretty much lost everything that I held dear in my life.
Wow.
I'd lost my brother. I'd lost my husband. I was pregnant at the time. And then afterwards, I lost my health, Paul.
Wow.
I was found one morning unconscious with my daughter sitting on me, crying, please don't die, please don't die. And medical tests revealed that I actually had a benign inoperable brain tumour.
Oh my God.
And so this started a whole story in my life. I was really just still reeling from all the losses. And I was really only coming to terms of being a sole parent and figuring our futures and how to really navigate my world after so much trauma and tragedy.
Mm.
And so this brain tumor was completely life-stopping yet again.
Sure.
And so basically I went through about 6 neurology departments in 6 different hospitals. I ended up going to London and begging people to give me a chance of life.
Wow.
And the answer came back the same each time. We're really sorry. We would love to help you, but this tumor is so big and so dangerous that if we operated, you wouldn't survive.
Wow.
So you can imagine, I'm only really in my late 30s. I've got a small child. She's only 5. I've lost my husband. I've lost pretty much everything. My father had died not so long after that. So I was faced with really challenging circumstances and making the most difficult decisions any human has to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I could not give up, Paul. I would not give up. I searched, I hunted, I asked, I researched. I had lots of support from my family. And, you know, that's always what I always say, never, ever give up. Because at the 11th hour, when I was really going to give up and resign myself to writing my will and writing letters to my daughter for her birthdays and weddings and all the things that you might miss, leaving a child behind. And one day somebody gave me an introduction to a neurologist who said, there's actually a maverick surgeon in Bristol. And why don't we send your scans to him? We did. And he wrote back. I never met him. He wrote back and he said, all right, I'll give it a go. But your chances of surviving aren't great. And if you do, you will be paralyzed down the left-hand side of your body for the rest of your life.
Wow.
Right. Guess what? Knowing my story now, Paul, what do you think happened? Yeah.
Yeah.
After 15 hours of neurosurgery, I was paralyzed down the left-hand side of my body. I had survived, of course, and they'd got all the tumor, but now the next part of the story began, because now I had to learn to live as a dependent.
Just before you tell us that, a couple of things I'd like to ask, if you don't mind. One, I thought 2020 was quite bad, but 2012, it takes a biscuit for you, I think. But can I ask a question? I'm sorry to ask this, but it's something that I'm very passionate about. I'm passionate about brains and how they work. Okay.
For me too.
Yeah. And following the operation, you're paralyzed down the left side. In what area of your brain was the tumor?
The tumor was in the right frontal lobe.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So the great thing about it is, and everybody's going saying, what was great about this? But the great thing was, my speech was never involved. And that was one of my biggest fears, that I wouldn't be able to speak. And we know there's a lot of stroke patients who lose their speech, and it's terrifying and horrifying. So I lost all my motor skills down the left hand side of my body.
Right.
So they didn't know actually how bad the damage was. And so when I actually became really acutely aware, it was a real shock. And I remember the day when I tried to move and I couldn't, and I was starting to become more conscious in the hospital bed, and it felt like a weight of potatoes on my body. And so the whole journey that began then was actually to go to a brain injury unit after I'd recovered somewhat and learn to live with my difficulties and my disabilities.
Right.
I wasn't one to give up. I think we can sort of hear that.
I think we've figured that out. You're a bit of a toughie, aren't you?
I'm a bit of a toughie. I think it was my childhood on the boat and learning to fish at a very young age and having to really, you know, tend to myself that actually gave me the kind of the grit, I think, that gave me that belief that I can do this.
Yeah.
I fought. I worked the weekends. I was not willing to stay where I was. I was not willing to take that prognosis.
Right.
And I'm aware we haven't got much time, so I'm going to move swiftly forward and say, I did learn to walk again. I learned to use my left hand again. Now, I also was left-handed. I had to learn to become right-handed. So if we're interested in brains, I had to rewire my brain to be right-handed well as learn to walk.
And how difficult did you find that?
Very, Paul.
Yeah.
It's not easy. I always say, if anyone's listening and they want to know a little bit of how difficult it is, try and brush your teeth tonight with the other hand.
Yeah,
I promise you'll give up.
when I was much, 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 much younger, I was a footballer at a reasonable level. And my coaches kept saying to me, use your left foot. Oh, I couldn't use my left foot. I've just fallen over. I had to practice and practice and practice. It's really hard, isn't it? Because it's just not, it doesn't feel natural. It just feels odd.
It isn't. And your brain's fighting you all the time, trying to get you to switch back over. So I had lots to learn. I had a huge amount to gain, and I had a huge amount of tenacity and resilience in me. But, you know, it took me years and years and years to use my left hand again. I walked relatively quickly.
Right.
But I had a fallout of, can you imagine, all of the unprocessed grief, all of the unprocessed losses, everything was accumulating at this point. Sure. Now, quickly, there was another part to the story that is vital. I was prescribed a lot of medication because I had really bad epilepsy, intractable seizures after neurosurgery. Right. So they had to keep adding in medication to keep my seizures at bay. Over the years, on 6 drugs 4 times a day, although I was learning to walk again and learning to live again, I was inadvertently becoming an accidental drug addict.
Right.
So that's why I say by the year 2012, I had lost pretty much everything. By 2012, I had lost all of those people in my life, but I also lost my mind.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest crux for me. So this is not going to all end up in a sort of a negative and dark story, because the good thing about this is that it is now 2021.
Yeah.
I managed to withdraw from those medications. I managed to gain my physicality back.
Mm.
I processed my grief. I worked through everything. And I knew there was a dark cloud still around me. And I needed to understand, how can I lead my best life? Mm. And this is what I love to talk about, is leading our best life, Paul. Sure. Because we can kind of go through life with blinkers on or or with complacency or a bit of mediocrity. And I knew that when I came out of this, that lots had changed. And I knew that I had a choice to go one way or the other. I could live in mediocrity or I could go for gold. And that's what I chose to do.
Absolutely.
So I worked it.
Yeah. Now, sorry, let me, because you make me feel bad now, because what happened, listeners, before we started talking off air, I was just saying to Rachel, I'm having a really bad day. And Rachel was so sympathetic. Oh, I'm so sorry. And now I feel like a complete idiot because, you know, my bad day was I couldn't post on social media. And then Rachel tells us this story about her bad year. But it's instructive, isn't it?
Yeah.
It shows you how a lot of things that we think are bad in our life compared to what other people suffer are nothing at all. And that should be salutary in terms of how we handle things, how we handle bad news, especially minor bad news like mine, like I'm having a bad day. You know, but you can get quite depressed by having a bad day. And I think once you hear a story like yours, you suddenly go, do you know what? That's just ridiculous. You know, I'm just so lucky. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely, Paul. I totally agree. But the only thing is everybody's pain is relative, okay?
Yeah.
And so I sort of think the thing that we need to learn is I'm a coach, I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, I'm a speaker, and my memoir will be coming out in November, which maybe I'll be able to talk about in a second.
Yeah.
So, you know, I managed to train to work with people about this, and I'm very clear that just because it's not a brain tumor, for want of a bad expression, it doesn't mean it's relevant. It's not relevant, rather.
Yes, yes.
And the thing is it's how we respond to our difficulties,
yes,
and how we come into the moment and ask ourselves, how can we change the moment right this minute? How can we turn this around into something? And it doesn't have to be Pollyanna-ish, Paul. It's just about a practice of changing the mindset. And you and I like minds. And we know a lot about the mind. And we know that the mind is naturally negative.
Sure.
It will naturally be negative.
Yeah.
So it's about learning to use those skills. And that's what I teach my clients, is how to harness the mind.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. And what tends to happen, and it happens to all of us, and I'm sure it happens to you sometimes as well, it happens to all of us, when we face a difficulty in our life, we have a tendency to dwell on the difficulty. Yeah. Oh, you know, poor me, this is not working. I hate this.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
like this. Yeah.
Yes.
What you did to try to overcome all those things that beset you is you focused on a solution.
You got it. Absolutely.
You focused on looking for a solution. You didn't give up hope. You tried as many avenues as you could. And even when that kind of half worked and presented you with another set of problems, you didn't go, oh, well, you know, I've half got there, we'll call it quits now and we'll just, no, you carried on looking for the ultimate solution.
And, absolutely.
And for me, I think that is the biggest mindset issue that 99% of us face, is that we don't, when we're faced with a dilemma, we don't look for the solution. We kind of wallow in the problem.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. Well, the thing is that from my point of view, I had to define a vision.
Yeah.
And funny enough, when I was going through the drug withdrawal, which was horrific, I was addicted to benzodiazepines. Mm. I had 47 symptoms, psychological and physical symptoms, that lasted 2.5 years. It took me 2.5 years. I did not leave my house in that 2.5 years. How did I keep going?
Yeah.
Because, Paul, I had a vision of a better life in my mind's eye. It was hard to hold on to it. It was hard to keep the faith. It was hard to keep doing what I had to do to come through this time. But when you can define a vision, a purpose and a meaning, and also get hungry, I think getting hungry for where you need to be, you're an entrepreneur, so you understand that hunger for getting somewhere. I believe that with practice, we can cultivate a hunger.
Mm.
When we define a certain level of parameters and goals in our mind, because motivation alone, to my mind, doesn't last. Motivation gets you kick-started.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then we've got to find ways of staying in that vein of success. And it is about being curious. Curiosity. How can I be better? How can I be more curious about life? So I kind of devise my own way. And that's what I use in my coaching with my clients now. And I mix it in with the hypnotherapy if it's needed to remove subconscious blocks. But you know what? The mind is plastic. The mind is malleable. And I'm living proof of that quite
literally. It's interesting what you say about motivation. It's very true. Many years ago, when I had a proper job and I worked for somebody else, they stupidly gave me a senior management job when I was very, very young. And I just found people odd. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to read the manual, find out how this works. And I read loads and loads and loads of stuff. One of the things that fascinated me was motivation. What motivates people? But what you were saying is, and this is quite true, and I can't remember who it was now, it was some famous management group. Anyway, they said that the problem with motivation is it's actually a hygiene theory. And what that is that you're motivated by something until you've got it, and then it doesn't motivate you anymore. So for instance, if I came along and said, I'm going to give you a pay rise, you might work a bit harder. But once I give you the pay rise, then it drops off. And God forbid, if I came along and went, oh, Rachel, sorry, it wasn't you. I'm going to have to take the money away. You haven't lost anything, but you are severely demotivated.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a hygiene thing. But it doesn't last. You have to go to the next level all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a bit like compound interest in the bank, you know. You've got to stack your successes. It doesn't, people say to me, oh, how did you get here? And I'm saying, because I stacked success on top of success, and they weren't big successes, Paul. Yeah. Success comes from minor little steps, and we stack them all up till we actually are standing on our sort of our own platform. And it takes time. There is no magic bullet. But what I do say to my clients and anyone when I'm speaking in interviews is, you will start to feel something. And when you start to feel something, this is the time that you cultivate.
Yeah.
You know, get curious and start to cultivate the energy of your own success. Celebrate every little milestone. Find ingenious ways to navigate. It's a bit like staying present for yourself, offering yourself the best. And if you fall off the wagon, don't look at it as if you've gone right back to scratch. Just see it as, I'm getting back on the wagon and I'm starting again today. And you know, this works. You've got to put your head into it. You've got to really cement yourself in, and you've got to be hungry for it. It's not going to happen for you if you're not hungry for it, just like anything in life. But I promise that if you really do want this, you will feel so empowered just by starting alone. And write stuff out. That's a great way of starting. Get yourself fired up.
I love what you're saying. The way that I refer to what you called stacking it is a process of evolution. Each step, each random step takes you to the next level. And sometimes it throws you over here or over there, but that isn't necessarily going to take you off track. You just got to find a different way back onto the track. I love that. Fantastic. What a story. Incredibly inspiring what you've achieved coming out the other side of it. So I just want to focus for the last few minutes of the interview now, Rachel, on your actual business, if you see what I mean. So what you do, how we can find out more about you. And I think you said you're in the process of publishing a book. Is that right?
Yes, I am. Flying on the Inside is actually due for publication with Amazon on the 1st of November.
Right.
And it's available on pre-order now. You can go to my author page, Rachel Gotto at Amazon, and look up Flying on the Inside and you can pre-order it. I think it's at a special discount at the moment, so it's a really nice time to buy it.
Right.
I work primarily as a coach and as a clinical hypnotherapist. Right. I got into clinical hypnotherapy because I figured out that I'd somehow clumsily been doing neuroscience at home in my bedroom when I was rewiring my brain and body to work and cultivating this you know, wonderful life that I'm so grateful for. Yeah. So I work very deeply with my clients. I'm solution focused. And so you can come to me for coaching or a mix of both. And of course, I'm a speaker. I love to share about my life because I think in these dark times, it's vital that we have stories where people have truly walked through the darkness and come to the light. So if anyone wants to inquire about me speaking, that's absolutely wonderful. And you can find me actually on rachelgotto.com. I'm just in the middle of rebranding and putting some online courses there, but the old website is still there. I'm very current on Twitter at Rachel Gotto, and I have a lovely Instagram page which is Rachel V Gotto, where I share a little bit of insights into my own private world and a little bit about my life in Ireland. I love hens, Paul. I have hens at home.
Do you?
Yes, I do. So pictures of those. Yeah, I'm one of these people who keeps hens.
Hens. Okay. And do you keep hens as pets, as show animals? Or are you a breeder of, are you a breeder of exotic hens? How does that work?
No, I've got Biscuit, Geraldine, Anna, Ernie, and Maud. Okay, they're definitely pets. I don't eat them. I don't show them, but I do eat their eggs.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, that's lovely. So the book's coming out in November. You can pre-order it on Amazon. You've had a fantastic story there, and it's incredibly inspiring, what you've said to us. And right at the moment, and I'm sure it's fairly much the same in Ireland as it is here in the UK, we have a mental health epidemic on our hands because of the pandemic, because of the lockdowns, because we've all been shut indoors for a year. The rates of mental health are going, problems are going through the roof. I'm the chairman of a charity that looks after people with addictions, drink and drug addictions. And we're 50 years old this year, and we have never been as busy, sadly. We're a residential home, and we can only handle so many people. We've got a massive waiting list. We've never had a waiting list before. We've got a massive waiting list of people. So the kind of work you do is going to become crucial and critical as this unwinds, because so many people have suffered, depression and mental health issues. And as it unwinds, it's going to get worse for a little while, because at the moment, I think the Irish government, like the UK government, are kind of paying people to stay at home and all that kind of stuff. That's got to stop at some point, which point, you know, we're all going to find out we've lost our jobs or businesses have gone bust, and it's going to get worse. So, you know, we're all going to be facing a lot of dilemmas in our lives that we weren't expecting to face. So your story, your insights and your inspiration are going to be even more important than they were, and they were very important before. So, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Just give us one more shout out for your website so that people can find out more about you.
Yes, it's rachelgotto.com and Twitter at rachelgotto. You'll find me somewhere there all the time, and you can get in touch. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you, Paul.
That was a pleasure. Let me just spell that so people can find it. It's Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, and Gotto, G-O-T-T-O.
That's right, rachelgotto.com.
.com. Fantastic. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us on The Bunker Show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. You are such an inspirational lady, and I'm really glad that the lovely Samantha Kelly introduced us.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday. 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker Extra Show with Paul Andrews.
Because it's been a fantastic story to hear from you.